Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show which helps you lead where God has placed you. I'm Andy Peck. Many have noted that the first individual in the Bible described as being filled with the Holy Spirit was Bezalel, who was working on the tabernacle and described in Exodus 35. This seems to endorse the idea that God is and always has been interested in the arts, but it would be fair to say that the arts have not always been valued, especially in the Protestant era. So to talk about Christians in the arts and indeed music as well, and how this should affect our thinking in church and wider field, I'm joined by Charlie Ingram, the minister of Bessels Green Baptist Church. So welcome, Charlie, back to the Leadership File.
Yeah, hi Andy, good to be with you again.
We've looked before chatting about Christian leadership and sport, so listeners can download that by going to the Premier site or going to iTunes. But we turn to another interest of yours, which is the arts and music. You have a degree in music technology and have been a professional musician for the Christian folk rock band Eden Burning. So this is no idle passion of yours. When did you decide you wanted music to be part of your life?
I had piano lessons as a kid, but I didn't really take to it. It was only when I was 13 or 14 years old that I discovered a passion for music with the electric guitar. It seemed to me that the electric guitarist seemed to get all the girls rather than the keyboard player.
So
that was the instrument to take up. And I guess around the same time, it's around 1984, so Mission England, the Billy Graham
priest
at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Mission Praise had just come out. And I don't know if anyone remembers that period in the 80s in the Christian church. But if we wanted to include this new worship music with guitars in our church, a Baptist church in Cheltenham, then someone needed to learn the guitar. So a few of us took about it. I pretty much learned the guitar from the chord charts at the back of Mission Praise.
Oh, well.
I did have lessons later on, but that's where it started. And Eden Burning really came out of that worship group at that church. But it feels like a long time ago now. I joined Eden for their second album, having been their sound engineer to begin with. And I had kind of 6 months or so to learn the mandolin. So I set about that. I practiced 8 hours a day, I think, for 6 months.
And
really threw myself into it, loved it, enjoyed it, found a real passion and a real energy in it. I to be honest, I'm not the greatest musician, but I've always been a reasonably good performer, which I think probably worked in my favour. So yeah, it was good fun.
Well, I must admit, I did go to YouTube and I did find some clips, and I'm pretty sure you were part of those clips. So listeners, if they're wondering what we're talking about, can go and listen to Eden Burning on YouTube. I think were you involved in putting them onto YouTube? Did I see your name?
Yeah. So given the kind of technology background that I've had as well, I found some old clips over the time and I put a few up there, yes. Yeah.
And many listening will remember you, I'm sure. In fact, I was, before coming on air, I happened to chat to a colleague and mentioned who I was speaking to and what about. And he said, oh, yeah, Bernie, I remember them, you know, so really good. So, and I think it would be regarded that you were a successful band.
Yeah. I guess at the time, early 90s, I guess we kind of gave way to Delirious, who other of your listeners will have heard of. But at the time, most of the Christian festivals, Spring Harvest, Greenbelt, we were playing a lot of those and you know, great. Our concerts were well attended. I think the fan club had about 6,000 members, and we had more than that on a main list. So yeah, it was good times.
Yeah. Did you look in terms of fruit? Was it that kind of ministry, or was it because, you know, people, if they enjoyed it, that was the fruit?
We didn't really do evangelistic gigs, if that's what you mean.
Right.
But I do still meet people today who remember Eden very fondly. We started off playing the church circuit, churches and concerts, but actually towards the middle of the 90s, as the band eventually came towards an end, we'd moved over to the university circuit, and the the club circuit, you know, the genuine music venues across the UK up to a capacity of 500 or so. And I think Christians at university were just really pleased to have a band that were singing about their faith in a way that didn't make them cringe, that were playing in the student union bar that they could bring their friends to and know that they'd get a good night's entertainment, and but also connect with their faith.
Yeah. And it was a sort of folk rock band. Is it possible for you to describe for listeners your style?
So I suppose at the time, influences would have been things like the Wonder Stuff, REM, the Levellers, that kind of period. And then towards the later albums, it got more a bit more influenced by Britpop. So there's a bit of Blur and Oasis in there, kind of. But it's, difficult to pigeonhole. But those are some of the kind of influences.
Yeah. So looking back to, you know, to Charlie, who was part of the Eden Burning, and now the Charlie, who's a Baptist minister, would the two recognise each other? Would the previous Charlie be rather surprised where you've ended up?
It depends when. Not as a 15-year-old.
Right.
As a 15-year-old, I was very zealous. I was up leading worship in church. And I guess in many ways, that's where my calling to ministry originates, was standing in front of a church leading worship and feeling a sense of home and a sense of vocation, and that perhaps one day this might be a role for me in the future. But like anybody, my faith hasn't gone in a straight line. And since then, there have been periods of deconstruction and periods of doubt and then periods of strong faith. So, I guess it would depend when people met me. But certainly the 15-year-old, that's where my calling into ministry, I think, probably originated.
Okay. And I was looking at your CV, and it suggests you served, I think you went to, you were trained at Spurgeon's, but you ended up in an Anglican setting. Have I read that correctly before?
Yeah. So, a bit unusual, trained for Baptist ministry and end up in an Anglican church. Mm. But at the time we were living in Southeast London, and my wife, Sarah, was working for Greenwich Youth for Christ. She's a Christian as well, and was volunteering doing detached youth work on a local estate. And as I began to look and explore churches to settle in, we felt a pretty strong calling to this estate that we knew that was on our doorstep. But there wasn't a Baptist church on the estate. Instead, there was a small, struggling really, Anglican church plant in the shopfront. So rather than set up next door to them in competition, we thought perhaps a more honouring thing to do was to have a discussion with the bishop and the local rector and see if we could partner with them to work within the church. And we ended up setting up an Anglican Baptist LEP. It's a local ecumenical partnership.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up, I ended up working in this for the first 5-6 years of ministry.
Yeah, fabulous. Now, and the other thing I noticed, and you have the distinction of serving as an assistant, associate and senior pastor at the same church, which, again, outsiders to the Baptist setup probably won't know. It's a little bit unusual for folk to be able to do that. So that's credit to you and the church. But lovely to see that sort of journey.
Yeah. The church must be very patient and very gracious. That's all I have to say. So I joined as originally as an assistant. And then after having been at the church 5 years or so, they asked me if I'd take on an associate role. I guess it was kind of just a recognition, really, of my developing and growing ministry. And then 2-3 years ago, when the then senior minister moved on to a larger local church, the elders, the trustees, asked if I'd consider taking on the senior leadership role. And it felt like the right step. My family are very settled in the area. We're very happy here. We love the church. We didn't feel we'd finished all that God had set out for us to do here. So, they asked if I'd take over the role, and I started to go through the whole interview process with the church, but, they were overwhelmingly supportive. So yeah, it's been great. And I've now, recruited someone to replace my old job. He's a guy called Andy. He's great to work with. So, we're enjoying being here.
Fabulous. Did you feel it was a brave move in the sense that, some people just perceive you as, oh, he's the assistant, really. Is that kind of feel or,
No, I was very fortunate in that Neil, my predecessor, had been very collaborative, and we had quite a quite an even balance in the leadership anyway. So there wasn't very hierarchical. So it felt quite natural. It seems to have been a good transition in the main.
Good, good. So has it been easy to incorporate your love of the arts and music into your leadership of a local church?
In some ways, you know, I'm often looking for clips or illustrations that stem from the arts, from music or film or painting. Obviously, worship music is a big part within the life of the church, and it's been great to get stuck into that and rediscover some old gifts with music. And it's not unusual on a Sunday to find me stuck behind the drum kit if we're stuck for a drummer. That's always good fun. One of the things we're looking to do as a church for the future is to remodel our sanctuary. It's been a long time since it's been decorated. It's looking quite tired. And I put before the church a vision, an idea, a suggestion that perhaps while we did this, we should remodel the sanctuary in such a way that it can be used more for the arts, for theatre or for acoustic performances, as a way of building mission. Of building community through the church. I think the arts is a great way of engaging people from the community, along with sport, which I know we talked about previously. I think art's another similar way that it's great to be able to invite the community in and see the church in a different light.
Fabulous.
So we've been working towards that. We're a listed building, so we've been bogged down in the quagmire that is listed building planning approval. But I did just hear this morning that they've approved the initial stages of our proposals. So hopefully that'll go ahead in the new year and we can start looking at actively using the arts more within the life of the church.
That's good to hear. While you're listening to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, I'm joined this week by Charlie Ingram, who's the minister of Bessels Green Baptist Church and also was part of Eden Burning. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Reverend Charlie Ingram, the minister of Bessel Green Baptist Church in Sevenoaks in Kent. We're particularly talking about Christianity and the arts. For a little while, Charlie was involved as a professional musician with the band Eden Burning. We were talking a bit about that before the break and starting to talk a little bit about arts and music in the local church. Charlie, I think it's fair to say that for some Christians who maybe grow up in a church or visit a church and become a Christian through a church, the whole idea of arts and music being part of their life is not necessarily there from the start. And they have to kind of almost go through a realization that God values their art and their music. And that should be there. If there were listeners in that category, I mean, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think the whole sacred secular divide that points to is a myth and a real flaw in our theology.
Yeah,
and part of being made in the image of God, made in the image of a creator God, is that we have this ability and desire and drive to express our creativity. And music and the arts are just such a good way of doing that. I'm not sure there's such a thing as Christian music and secular music.
Yeah,
it's just good music and bad music. And I think the quicker we start to demolish and challenge that sacred secular divide, the better.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was going to go on to ask a question about your love of the writings of various people, including Rob Bell, who famously said, you know, the word Christian is a great noun but a lousy adjective, you know. which he was, I think, saying in the same sort of context that some people say, oh, this is Christian music. Well, actually, no, it's good or bad music. It's not, you know, the Christians do music, but what makes it, quote, Christian music? Well, you know, that's a bit of an issue. I mean, okay, people understand what's meant.
Yes.
But actually the point he was making is that actually... it sometimes is in an inappropriate language. So you list a love of the writings of people like Rob Bell, Brian McLaren and Dave Tomlinson, who are men who've sought to help people think differently about some of the accepted wisdom of classic evangelicalism. Are there particular things, you know, you found helpful in those guys?
Yeah, I mean, you've referred to Rob Bell, and I guess, you know, his one of the things he's known for is the phrase "everything is spiritual." I think he borrowed it from Richard Rohr, actually, who found it from. But that's again about demolishing this sacred secular divide. And you know, Rob's very acrimonious split from his church and some of the nasty things that were said about him. I think if you look at the work he's doing now, he's embodying that theology. He's still talking about God. He's still talking about Jesus, but he's doing in a way that a surprising number of non-Christians are connecting with. And I think there's something we can learn from that. I've enjoyed his writing. More recently, authors perhaps like Brian Zand or Scott McKnight. I think I've just finished a book by the Orthodox priest Brad Jerzak. So yes, all perhaps on the progressive end of things. But I found they've really helped me in my faith journey, particularly over recent years. I think you asked about books, and I think there are three that have been really influential to me over the years. One in the 90s would have been The Post-Evangelical by Dave Tomlinson.
Right. Yep.
I think that book was so timely. And I know for me personally and many, particularly around the kind of Green Belt Festival at the time, I would go so far as to say that book saved my faith. And then Threshold of the Future, Mike Riddell, a book in the noughties. I'm looking at Acts 10:10 and how we might shape our mission and reach out into the world. And recently a book, Francis Spufford's Unapologetic. I don't know if you've ever had the chance to interview him.
I haven't, but I've read the book, and it's a very fine book.
Yeah, and again, you know, at a particular time of upheaval, that was a book that really held me in. So there are three books that have, at different periods in my life, really helped me sustain faith.
Sure. So can you give us the titles again, because people may be looking for a pen to try and jot it down.
You can put them in the show. So it was the Post-Evangelical by Dave Tomlinson, which was written in the 90s, but I think they've just released a 20th anniversary edition. That was just very timely for a lot of us. There's a book called Threshold of the Future by Mike Riddell. Used to write in Third Way magazine at the time, looking at mission. And then most recently, Unapologetic by Francis Spufford. He's such a good writer. I think he's won the Orange Prize for some of his fiction work. And he brings that talent for writing to his faith. And it's a superb book. Some might find it on the progressive end of things. So, you know, if that's going to upset you, perhaps steer clear of it. But if you're happy to read and have your mind stretched and think, then that's a great book to read. I've lost count of the number of copies I've bought for other people.
Sure. And yes, he's got a definition of sin, which is kind of 15 or 18 rated perhaps, but communicates very well. So,
and we've adopted it as a church. I just replace one of the words to muck things up.
Yeah, well done. Very good. So it sounds to me like your journey has been in a sense asking the question, so is the classic evangelical faith that we've been brought up with, is it really going to function for the 21st century? And obviously these characters have done a lot of thinking and writing about those kind of issues, and that's something that's been dear to your heart as you've sought to lead a church in a contemporary world where there's a lot of scepticism about some of the classic categories of faith.
Yeah. And I find it staggering. Interestingly, this conversation has been going on in academic theological circles for years. I mean, at the bastion of evangelical theology, Spurgeon's College, we studied a module on models of the atonement that looked at different atonement theories. It didn't just present penal substitution, but it looked at other alternatives and gave us the chance to debate and discuss their merits. Now, that's happening at an academic theological level, but it's not happening in our churches, or wasn't happening in our churches and in the pews. So, I'm up for having that conversation. I think we need to debate it. I think it's time we took allowed intelligent conversation about faith as much as possible, because it's been happening in our colleges. We just need to be brave enough to take it into the churches.
Yeah, I was interviewing a guy called Steve Backhouse who does a thing called tent theology, where he goes to different local churches and spends maybe 10 days there doing a series of talks, but kind of living amongst them and being like a resident theologian. And we were talking about the issue is that often people go away to theological college and find their mind stretched and challenged in good ways. But then they come back to go into pastoral ministry, and then they feel almost obliged to tick the boxes of the congregation members who would be alarmed at some of the things they're thinking about. And we were just discussing that the issue that it's not very, in one sense, it's not very honest and genuine. But actually, many members of the church would actually like to explore some of the issues because they've got questions themselves. Yeah. And there's no space to express that. And then they end up, some of them, drifting away from faith because they think, well, these guys are all nuts because I can see big holes in the argument that they don't seem to see. That's what you seem to be describing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's very much what I've tried to do here. And, you know, the majority have responded very well to it. But some people do find it very destabilizing. So you have to do it with care and with love and recognize that everyone's on a journey and they're perhaps not where I am. So I try to do it appropriately. But yes, you're absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And of course, the key to that is what is the Bible? What is it trying to do? And too many have used it as a kind of a list of proof texts for doctrine when actually it's a bigger thing and there's a bit bigger thing going on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree.
Well, Charlie, we've kind of come to the end of our conversation. Are there other books that you found especially helpful in Christian in the Arts that you'd just like to mention?
I wrote my master's thesis on it at Spurgeon's a few years ago.
Oh, right.
So there's a pile of academic books out there in my on my library, but probably some of the accessible ones, anything by Jeremy Begbie. He's just a fantastic theologian who's engaging in theology and the arts. I really like his writings. So I couldn't recommend that. Look out for Resounding Truth by Jeremy Begbie or really anything by him. It's a really good introduction to this world of theology and the arts. Perfect. Or theology through the arts, I think is how he describes it, which is another conversation and interesting again.
Sure. So that's Jeremy Begbie, Resounding Truth would be one, and there's other books by him.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah.
And splendid. Well, and as I say, I can list some of these books and details on the notes. If you go to the on-demand section shortly after listening to this, there'll be a list, so that can help you to connect if you need to. So Charlie, it's fascinating to chat with you and to discover a little bit about your journey in a short period of time, and also to encourage those out there who are Christians but have a particular calling or concern for the arts and music. And I guess in a sense that should be all of us, but obviously there's some with that particular calling and passion for that, to actually exercise that within the local church and beyond the local church to the blessing and to the seeing of the kingdom of God being demonstrated and lived.
Yeah, no, I agree. Amen.
Thank you. Well, you've been listening to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I was joined this week by Charlie Ingram. He's the minister of Bessels Green Baptist Church. We were talking about Christianity and the arts. He was, of course, member of the band Eden Burning. And as I said to him, you could go and find archive versions of that as well on YouTube if you were particularly interested, or if you remember the band or vaguely remember the band and want to remind yourself of what the band was like. So my thanks to Charlie, and my thanks to you for being listening. Do go to Premier's online on-demand version of the show by going to premier.org.uk, and go to iTunes too to find archive versions of the Leadership File. I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's Word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.